There she is. Beloveds, remember when we took grammar? Didn't you hate grammar? Sorry, Sister Doe. Glory to God for conjunctions. Look at verse 27. But, do you see it, Cliff? No hope. There's no hope. They're done for. There's 600 and they've got thousands. But, and let me tell you, beloved, once God says that word, there are certain words in the Bible that once God says, everything's okay. Nevertheless is one of them in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus, oh Father, if there's any other way, take the cup from me. Three times. Then he got the victory. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine. And I'm going to tell you, those of you that are listening to foolish charismatic teaching, that you think you're too spiritual to say, if it be your will, God, what you did was, you used to know better, then you became a spiritual moron, and there's hope that you'll grow back to where you were. Okay? Okay? Look at it. When once Jesus said, nevertheless, baby, that was the end of the problem. You hear what I'm saying? That was the commitment. It was done. When God says, but, you know, everything's going wrong, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And then comes the saving word, but. Okay? But there came a messenger unto Saul, saying, haste thee and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land. I can't believe it. The Philistines? See, are you there? Is anyone listening? You're in trouble. You're David. You're surrounded. You're praying for help. And can you believe who God sends to your rescue? The Philistines. You know who that is. Your mother-in-law. Oh, God, I'm in trouble. We won't make it. God, send me financial help. Send me financial help. And your mother-in-law comes in and says, you kids need a little money this month? Oh, not, no, no. Sin of pride. Sin of pride. God's trying to build a bridge between you and the mother-in-law that hadn't been there. God, haven't you got anybody else up there to help? Not the Philistines. See, listen to me. See, we don't think God will use someone wicked to do something good. Now, good here's a relative term. They're going to kill Israelis. Right? Come on. But it's going to be the tool to use. In other words, God's going to use them to punish the Israelis that aren't following him and are hounding his anointed. God, yeah, you got it. Killing two birds with one stone. But do you see, listen. All kind of things going in our lives and we don't recognize the hand of God. Or anybody but the Philistines. God, don't use them. Listen, when you're in this much trouble, you'll even thank God for Philistines. Okay? Now, let me tell you what else I want you to see by this. Notice, this is a real enemy. Did you notice back up in verse 5? Who was it? David had just defeated the Philistines not long before this at Keilah. Look at verse 5. This is the last bunch in the world you'd think God would use to be the answer to David's prayer. Think on what I just said. That God uses the last people, the last thing you would ever imagine to be the solution to your prayer. David wasn't praying for Philistines. Let me put it that way. Observe what I'm saying. What do people teach us? Pray like a .22 rifle. Pray precise. I'm so stupid, I don't know how to pray precise most of the time in my problems. I can tell you, you know, if my foot's cut off, oh God, my foot, you know, then I can pray precise. Come on. But most of the times my problems are so complex, too many lives are involved in it. I don't know how to, and you know, okay, God, here's the way you ought to solve it. And he's probably ain't going to do it that way because God doesn't take counsel. Not needing any. Okay. But what I'm trying to get you guys to understand, we don't have to pray like a .22 rifle. We're not smart enough to figure out the Philistines were the way to do it. It would have never occurred to me to use the Philistines. You got it? So why don't we go to God like David did in the psalm? God, save me! Help! Good basic prayer. Okay? Notice something else. Listen. Notice something else. Do you love it? The timing. Jehovah Jireh. I've got several Jews in here that are born again. Jireh. God, Jehovah, saves even if it's at the very last moment. Like he was called that when he took the knife up, Abraham, to slay his only begotten Isaac. And it was at that last moment, his heart, Abraham had made up his mind to obey God. Do you realize what that would look like here in Houston in the newspaper tomorrow? Religious fanatic takes son up to mountain to slay. Says he heard God. I'm trying to tell you, when you hear from God is when it really takes faith. Because that's when it's going to look so stupid to everyone else. Moreover, do you really see and perceive finally that God is in control of circumstances, including the circumstances that got us in this problem? Now, look, David, let's back up. Let's say it again. David doesn't have to be in this trouble. He didn't have to run. He ran without hearing from God. He could have stood, having done all, stand. Of course, he didn't have Ephesians 6. But he could have done it. In other words, David got himself into it. God's going to let him work his way out, learning things so that he will be a fit king. And while he does it, you and I are getting to learn so that we don't have to get chased by Saul for 10 years. Jason, you and I can learn. God is in control of the circumstances. The timing was just right. If you had asked David, was the timing just right? No. They should have gotten there an hour ahead of time. Right? No one wants to get in this much trouble. It's only glorious when you give your testimony afterwards. I hope you enjoyed saying that. I did. The Philistines have invaded the land. Verse 28, wherefore Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore they call that place, look at this, Selahama-Likoth, which means the rock of escape. The rock of escape. I want you to observe, now listen, parting shots for the night. I want you to observe that David gets away, David escapes, without having to strike a blow. He's surrounded by an army. He's got 600 armed warriors. Let me put it another way. If we were watching this on television, with the way we've been brought up here in America, we would really be disgusted with the final of that movie. You know, it's kind of like Who Came Out, The Lady of the Tiger, right? And we don't know. See, we want Rambo. Come on, gang. We want to see David kill those dogs to the glory of God. See, David does not want to kill anyone. He does not want to kill these people. He sees himself as their uncrowned shepherd. And I want you to see that God got him out of it without doing what, as we come to the last verse, it looks like he's going to have to do. Come on. Up until this last verse, isn't the only hope David's going to have to fight? He and the 600 are going to have to aim for what looks like a weak place in the enemy line and fight their way through and hope to escape. Otherwise, we've got another Alamo in our hands. But observe, not a man's life's blood was shed, either David's or Saul's. I'm trying to encourage you that you can be in the worst mess you've ever seen, and that you can pray, and just like in David's case tonight, we read the Psalm 54. After the prayer, it got a lot worse. And now comes the honest question we have the right to ask of God. Did God hear the prayer? Did God answer the prayer? Did God answer the prayer when we had in mind. Almost never. Number one, if he did it all the time, Ken, I'd start thinking he was my bellhop. Number two, if he did it all the time, I wouldn't grow. My faith would stay that of an infant. We're seeing what it takes to be molded into the shape of one who is going to reign and rule. I have exciting news for all of you. I don't care what your doctrines are. I'm going to tell you the truth. You're going, those of you that have been born again, by simple faith in Jesus Christ, whose blood was shed to pay the price for our sin, who rose from the dead on the third day, all of this, if you have trusted Him for that, you're going to reign and rule with Him forever. Amen. And right now the problem is, we're not fit to rule. You know, the most devastating thing God ever told me years ago, when I thought He was wasting a lot of talent, mine, doors weren't opening, wasn't getting to minister much, and I thought, wow, is God missing a golden opportunity? And the Lord began to speak to me. Began to talk to me. I don't want to tell you all about it. But He let me know some things He was going to do with my life. It hadn't happened. I am not going to die tonight. It's really simple. See, I've learned from David. These things that God said I would do, I haven't done. They're not great. They just hadn't been done. And so I told the Lord that we should get on with it and do them right there. Because I was ready. And the Lord told me I didn't know the Scriptures well enough. I protested. And I told Him I didn't know anybody that knew them as well as I did. And that was not arrogance. I had reason to say it. Now, you may know someone that does, but I didn't at the time. And the Lord told me that, unfortunately, that wasn't the standard He was going by. It wasn't whether I knew them better than anyone He knew or I knew. That wasn't what He was interested in at all. He went on to tell me that the problem was my Christian character and the fruit of the Spirit simply was not developed in me to the point that if He let me do what He's called me to do, it would destroy me in pride and arrogance, since I was already having trouble with that about how well I knew the Scriptures. It took me several days to get over that one. You see what I'm trying to tell you? I didn't like hearing that. You want to know what's worse? There's days I feel like, when I look at my life now, I feel like I was farther along then in this Christian character development, fruit of the Spirit thing. And you want to know why? Because the more you do grow, the greater Jesus becomes to you. And so when you think about Him, it looks like you're farther away. But you got to remember that so that you don't get discouraged. You hear what I'm saying? Did you notice in the story that the rock stood between David and his enemies? For a long time, did you notice that? See, I could have made the point then, but see, understand that rock was typical of Christ. He is the rock. You say, yeah, but they got around the rock. Uh-huh, but the rock got around them afterwards. And that's right. Just like the fire stood between the Egyptians and the Israelis, this rock stood between David and the enemy. And the last thing it says, David went up. Isn't it great to be delivered without having to strike a blow? Isn't it great? Have you ever come to a situation where it looked like the only way out was you were going to have to tell somebody off? And if you did that, you knew it'd be almost impossible to ever lead them to the Lord. And you really didn't want to have to tell them off. Have you ever had a situation where everything welled up in you that you just like to give that person a piece of your mind, but then you got a grip on yourself and you thought, yeah, but if I do, there is zero hope of a relationship ever again. You'd be surprised what people tell me, how people tell me off. You'd be surprised. And I'd like to tell you that I'm so spiritual that retaliation thoughts never come to my mind. But golly, it's hard to teach and then lie like that. But let me tell you the important part of it. The important part is that if you really want to be delivered from it without having to strike a blow, that God will do it for you. So that same person later will come to you and say things to you that are embarrassing. I've never seen anyone take it like that. You should have done this, but you didn't. How did you have so much of what it took? It's embarrassing because I didn't. You know what I mean? And I'd like to tell you, I always got those victories, but that's another lie. And I'm not going to tell it to you. But what I'm saying is, we need encouragement. And I find sometimes, Randy, when I get encouraged by the Lord, that it was too much. It embarrassed me. Because I knew when that person came and said, that was such a fine Christian thing you did, that I knew what a struggle I had not to kill him at the time. But Christianity is not that you don't ever have to grapple with that. Christianity is, it gets easier as time progresses if you're willing to let God be your avenger. But if you're determined to avenge yourself, you won't grow and you won't get those embarrassing moments of God letting you get praised when you remember that you really did want to kill him. Parting shot. Last part of the verse, look at it. And then there he fled. He dwelt in the strongholds at Engedi. We'll see that next week. And then notice this. Verse 24, and it came to pass, chapter 24, when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of Engedi. You know what I want you to think on about that as I close this whole thing down for the night? Saul got the victory over the Philistines. Now, the Philistines were the instrument in God's hand to deliver David. Maybe it was going to be a total victory. Come on, gang. If Saul gets killed in the battle with the Philistines, David's king, and all this is over. Have any of us prayed that one before? Come on, gang. Oh, God, if you'll just kill this district manager. You know, my life will be better. Or, you know, yeah, I never saw so many grins. And you know, how many of you know that comes in many different shapes. You know, oh God, if you'll just take my husband home. Or how about this one? Oh God, if you'll just take my ex-wife home. You know, or my ex-boyfriend, or my ex-girlfriend, or my teacher. If you'll just kill this chemistry teacher, surely the next one won't be this bad. You know. You hear what I'm saying to you tonight? See, we keep thinking the solution to our enthronement, to our rightful place, is the total removal of someone else. Right? Our mother, our father, our boss, our next-door neighbor who keeps throwing his garbage over the back fence, whose dog keeps digging up our flowers. If only they would transfer him to Odessa. That dog deserves to go to Odessa. You know, sand, man, sand. Now, listen to me. I want you to observe this looked like a great chance to not only to get rid of the whole problem. Glory to God for the Philistines. the Philistines lost. Saul won. Tilt. Think. Do you all therefore perceive, and I hope you'll think on this all week long, that human success does not necessarily mean that God, that you are that person that has achieved human success, is pleasing to God. Saul won. Saul defeated the Philistines. Question, is Saul being rewarded for pleasing God? I got promoted to district manager. I must be a great Christian. My company just made a $10 million sale. Oh, he must be a Christian. Oh, and a great Christian. No, this is Tulsa doctrine now. And I'm trying to show you the Bible just doesn't go along with this. Right? Come on. So-and-so has a church with 10,000 members. Must be a great man of God. No, that dog's got a glass cathedral and he needs to be born again. You can build General Motors without God. God doesn't give a fig about General Motors. He cares about the people that work at General Motors. God didn't die for Chevrolets. He died for the people that work building Chevrolets. You can have success from a human standpoint and do human achievements. You can be known as the greatest singer in the world or the greatest Bible teacher in the world, and God not be in it one whit. And you not please God one whit. So don't mistake human achievement for the blessings of God. Four beloveds. And God not be in it one whit. And you not please God one whit. So don't mistake human achievement for the blessings of God.